Agenda we're going to walk through today. We're going to show you a new way of deploying from Visual Studio. I'm going to show you Visual Studio 2013. You saw Scott kind of talk about this during his keynote. I'm actually going to show you a couple of new buttons in there. Just to show you some new stuff that we've added. Throughout this presentation, you're going to kind of pick up on a theme. It's how Marco Studio developed the website using websites, and Luke is going to go through and he's going to talk about some different tenets of their development cycle and things that they wanted to accomplish and how they were able to accomplish that using websites. So we're going to kind of take the pie in the sky stuff that I talk about, and he's going to show you how they applied it during their development cycle. Then we're going to talk about multiple environments using websites and TFS. Anybody just push the prod all the time? Just go ahead and out of your garage, production, crash, oh God. Okay, you don't want to do that. So I'm going to show you how you can prevent that kind of pain. Luke is going to show you something really interesting, how to back up your website data. That's going to be pretty cool. We're going to talk to you a little bit about load testing. You definitely always want to load test your site to make sure that it'll stay alive. Piggybacking on load testing, we're going to show you how to scale it so it will. And the last thing that we're going to show is going to be options for integration with on-premise applications, even when they're not .NET. Oh, tech-ed, not .NET. And then we're going to talk about storing blobs in Windows Azure. What kind of blobs? Like the PowerPoint decks that people like us had to upload so that you can download them and use them later on. So we're going to talk about all that stuff today. Again, very quick new file new project demo, and I'm going to show this to you using VS 2013. Because there's one little button in it that I think is pretty cool. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do file new project, ASP.NET application. You'll see that there's one ASP.NET application that goes along with the one ASP.NET mantra. And I'm just going to create a pretty simple one. I'm going to go ahead and do a, I'll do an empty web just so it's easy to push. And I'll do, actually I'm going to do a web forms app. I'll do web forms here. I do want to show you that we have this change authentication guide. You can actually get a Windows authentication if you're doing it on an intranet app, or you could do organizational accounts, and that's when you would be able to use Windows Azure Active Directory to do all of your Active Directory integration to your website. And that'll basically put in all the configuration and all the magic for you. I'm just going to real quickly do create website. And the next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to flip over here to my portal. Now this is my MSDN account. I'm going to zoom in on this real quick. That's better, hopefully. This is my MSDN account. This is my free account that I get to use for demos. You could actually use your MSDN account and you could manage your entire dev test scenario and never have to pay for it. You could do all of your dev test stuff out in Windows Azure. Whether or not you deploy to Azure for production usage, you could do all your dev test stuff and never have to spend a dime because the MSDN benefits are just that good. Now I'm going to open up ZoomIt. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to right click right here. I'm going to select the publish guide. I'll zoom in on this, and you're going to see that I have this import button. I'm going to click that, and this is the new button that I wanted to show you. Get it? New button. Okay, so I'm going to click new here. I'm going to say some onstage file new project demo. And I can select which account I want to put it in. I have a couple of different ones. If I wanted to create a database, I could do a database right here. I could tell it which server I want to go to, or I could actually create a new database. And if I'm using EF migrations in my code, whenever this does the push, it's actually going to create all the stuff in the database on the first head. So you get to scaffold all that stuff directly from here without having to go to the portal. The portal's really nice and everything, but I'm a developer. I like to be able to use my development environment to do everything. Anybody else agree with me on that? The guy that created this, his name is Syed Hashimi. He's the PM for the team, and he and I hang out a lot with Matt Christensen. Now I've got this guy, I'm good to go. I hit OK here. And we were chatting on his deck one day, and I just put publish. That's going to go ahead and publish everything out. He said, what features do you not have in the web publish dialog? You show it all the time. You talk about it. You use it in your job. What feature do you not have? I said, new website. He's like, we're working on it. Why do I tell you that? Because those guys love to get your feedback. If you have any ideas like this, feel free to use their user voice. Go to their blog and make comments. Just let them know that you want it. And they'll put it in there, just like that feature that I got. That I asked for. So here, I've already gone ahead and created a new site. You'll see there it is. I go over to my portal, probably hasn't reloaded yet, so I'll just hit F5 here. And you'll see that that new website will pop up. And if I had told it to create a new database, you would also see a new database in there. The nice thing is, I didn't have to go to the portal and do new, new website, da 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 da. I did that directly from Studio. Anybody like that feature? Like your feature? Well, tell Syed if you like it. And then where is it? Right here. So there's the website that I just finished creating. That's great, huh? All right, now we're going to go back to Luke, let him talk to you about some good stuff.
Thanks, Brady. So we were awarded the contract to build the TechEd website this year, last year, and that was a pretty good deal for us because getting the chance to build a website that's going to be used by some of the best and brightest in the New Zealand technology community. And so I'm just here to share a little bit of our learning and discovery process we went through when choosing Azure as a hosting partner. Okay, so our journey started back in 2012. We built the mobile website for TechEd last year. And those of you that might have been here may remember that the desktop and the mobile site were very different last year. They had a completely different design, some different functionality. And so for 2013, we put our hand up to do both. We wanted to do mobile and desktop, and we wanted to host a lot of the data on the TechEd site as well. We were hoping we'd deliver a little bit more integrated experience moving between desktop and mobile. So just having a quick look at some of the requirements for TechEd this year. We needed a content management system. So a lot of the guys at Microsoft need to be able to update the content. They don't really want to be bugging developers all the time. Okay, e-commerce, ticket sales, obviously. Okay, we needed to build APIs for the third parties that are also involved in TechEd. So the wristbands you guys are all wearing, the registration desk, extensive reporting requirements, and newsletters you guys probably all got spammed with in the lead up to the conference. Okay, and a responsive design to tie this whole thing together. So there's just one website this year, across desktop and mobile, and we're trying to keep the functionality broadly similar across both devices. So there's a whole lot of custom development that ties this all together as well. And we're expecting, based on the usage of the mobile site last year, somewhere in the region of 1 million hits over the week of the conference. Okay, so we picked Kenko as the CMS to do the job for the TechEd site this year. And there's a few reasons for that. It's a very flexible CMS, and we find it has a very good set of, very extensive set of APIs that you can hook into if you need to change any functionality. It's got security, workflow versioning, that good stuff out of the box. And there's a whole lot of, you can hook into custom events as well to change any of the behavior of the site. Okay, so it's very quick to build, got a lot of experience with Kentico. Can stand up a site fairly quickly. And it's mature. I've been working with Kentico for probably since about 2006, I think. So a little history there. And Kentico just recently launched a pay monthly model. So the thing is, instead of shelling out upfront fee for a license, you can just pay per month. So we chose to partner with Windows Azure Websites for this. A few good reasons for that. Again, they also have a pay per usage model, and when you think about it, a conference website is the perfect use case for the cloud, because you can stand it up a few months before the conference and you can take it down fairly shortly afterwards. You only pay for what you use. Scaling, obviously very important. So we, over the period of the conference, there's not a great deal, or over the period of the site, there's not a great deal of traffic. And we get a few spikes for things like ticket sales, when the sessions get announced. And then obviously over the week of the conference, we expect huge ramp up in traffic. Okay, so there's Kentico support baked into Windows Azure websites now. So if you can say new website from Gallery, you'll see that Kentico CMS is one of the options in there. So you can get set up with a Kentico site very quickly. And Windows Azure websites supports website projects. And that's very important because Kentico is a website project. It's a very large website project. It weighs in at about 16,000 files. So Kentico has actually been available in Azure for quite some time now, but that was as a cloud service. So the thing is, they've taken the Kentico site and migrated that to a web application, but the development experience wasn't really all that great for that, because the thing is, any time you make a change to a file, you've got to wait for that major project to recompile. So Windows Azure websites and Kentico are a very good fit because it supports website projects. So there's a few things that we wanted to go and go through in proving out that this was really going to work for us, Kentico and Windows Azure websites. Because at the time, Windows Azure websites was in preview mode. So source code deployment. So obviously we need to be able to get the source code up into the cloud fairly easily. And there's a number of sprints we went through in this project, so we need to do that frequently. Database deployment as well. We want to develop on-premise. We want to have our database on-premise and then push it up to the cloud as late as possible. Scaling. It needs to scale. It needs to scale well over this week at the conference. And file storage. So this was another thing that we needed to kind of think about, because a major component of the file storage of the TechEd website is actually the speaker slide decks that get uploaded and that you guys will be able to download at the end of the conference. So having a quick look at source code deployment. Now when I initially looked at this, I thought, so I downloaded the published profile from the Azure portal, and I installed that in Visual Studio, and I tried to push that up. I tried to do a publish from Visual Studio. And that didn't really work so well, because 16,000 files is never really going to be all that good an experience. So this is where FTP comes to the rescue. So as someone pointed out, I could have used, you can also publish via FTP from within Visual Studio, but I fired up files well up, I dragged the solution and queue, hit process, and 3 or 4 hours later, that was up there. So then 16,000 files, does take a while to deploy, but once we've got the core of KDGI up in the cloud, there's really only a few dozen files we're deploying for each of the sprints. So that being said, source code deployment, that worked for us. I'll pass back to you, Brody.
Speaking of source code deployment, if anybody can just do that, again, coding out of your garage, just like on the weekend, you got a client, you want to build a freelance project, that all works well. That's the startup part of this presentation. You just need to get your code out. We're going to give you options to do that, FTP directly from Studio, et cetera, et cetera. But then you got to grow up. You got to do things like manage multiple environments. It was one of my favorite questions when I started talking about website. People would ask, well, what do I do in this context? Well, it's pretty easy. It works very similar to what you do if you had to set up your own CI server. Anybody ever done that before? Built a cruise control server, CI server, TwinCity server, Jenkins server. You ever done that? Not fun, right? Got to maintain it too. You also have to maintain all those environments. All you're trying to do is to basically simulate this kind of world. Developers are going to write code, that's the Xbox controller, coding away, quote unquote. They're going to put those files into their source code repository, TFS. We can also do this with GitHub. That's going to directly push all those files right up to their website. So you can basically check in your code, your build will run, and it'll push everything out to the website that you've got married up to your TFS repository. Now, you've got to change, and you want to do this safely. You don't just want to keep pushing to your production website. You've got customers coming in, everybody's happy. You want to come up with a UAT environment, or a test environment, or a QA environment. So you create a branch in your TFS repository, you branch all your code, move it all over, you set up a second website, and that can be in the free zone if you want. You could even do this using like an API to just spin the website up, run all your tests, and then deconstruct it if you want to. The idea being that whenever you push code into that branch, you don't push your production site. You only push your QA or your UAT site. Anybody got an environment like this? It's a good idea. You don't probably don't think about it. Okay? So that's kind of what we do there. And then whenever you get done with your UAT and everybody's cool and you signed off, you merge all that code change back up into your master branch or your production branch, and that will redeploy your production site. So that's how you would manage multiple environments using TFS. So I'm going to show you how to do that real quick. What I'm going to do first is I'm going to go over here to the portal, and I'm going to say new compute website. I'm going to create two sites. We'll call this onstage demo dev. I'll go ahead and make this West US. That'll apply. And then I'll go ahead and do new compute website. We'll call this onstage demo fry. I'll also put that in West US. I'll go ahead and click create here. And what I've got out here is I've already got a TFS project created into which I'm going to go ahead and commit code. I've actually already gone out and created a website. I'm going to open this up in VS 2013, and I'm going to show you all these nice new tools that we've got. See this fantastically improved team view we've got over here. It's pretty cool. Now, if I were to open up my source code explorer, what you're going to see in here is that I've got my root, and then I've actually got two branches. I've got my development branch. You'll see that it's got a pretty simple solution, just one website and a solution. And if I go down here to production, you'll see that I've got another one in there. What's really nice about this new window
is that it sees all the solutions that I've got in my entire repository right here. So I can see that there is my, I can't draw perfect circles and stuff, but I'll try to make it good there for you. So you'll see that we've got a development guy and we've got a production guy. So what I'm going to do right now is I'm just going to double click in that solution over here in my team view. I've got this guy, and you'll see right here that it says development environment. That's all well and good. And I'm going to double click on this solution. That's going to open up our production solution. And if I open this guy up right here, you'll see that there's our production site. So that's all great. And this is a song demo here. I just want to make a quick change to the file. So I'm going to go ahead and change both of these index pages. I'm going to change them just so I've got changes to commit. I'm going to close that down, and you'll see I've got the pending changes button right here. No more looking around, going to the source control guy and all that good stuff. We're just wired up. But I don't have any builds set up yet. I haven't actually created any builds in this guy. I've just got my code changed. You'll see if I go over to builds, hopefully I've deleted them all. Yep, I have. You see that we have no build definitions whatsoever, and we have no build history because I've already deleted those guys. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to go into my dev site. I'm going to scroll down to set up deployment from source control. I'm going to click that. It's going to pop up this TFS box right here. You've probably seen this demo done a couple of times. I'm going to go ahead and authorize my Azure account against my TFS account. I'll go ahead and hit accept here. Okay. That's going to pull in my TFS repos. That's the one that we did for build. I don't want to pick that one because we'll have bad problems here. It's a much larger. I'm going to do the same thing over here for production. I'm going to go over here to my dashboard one more time. Fill this guy. Scroll down right here, and I'll do setup from source control again. Again, I'll select TFS. Type in my TFS repo name. Oh, maybe. Illustrator.com. Hit authorize now. Got to do the accept one more time. Okay. Pull in my repo list. There's my repo. I'll go ahead and click OK right here. And what's going to happen now is that both sites are actually going to reach out to my TFS repository, set up a relationship with them, and as soon as that relationship has been established, TFS is going to do something pretty neat. It's going to say, hey, it looks like you probably have two different builds that you're going to have to deal with, and that's exactly what we've got. So I've got my onstage dev, my onstage demo dev build, I've got my onstage demo prod build. Anybody wonder how to do this? I did. I had to ask a couple people for a little while. Now what I'm going to do next, just to show you how this can work, now remember we've got two solutions in this entire repo. I'm going to right click this guy and say edit build definition. The first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to enable the ability for me to just fire the build directly from within Visual Studio. That's automatically turned off and it's going to give you that ability. I'm going to go ahead and do that right here. Now I'm going to go over to process, and this is the part that I kind of had to look for, but it's a lot easier now. You look right here, you'll find solution to build in your process window. I'm going to click this guy, and it's going to show me my entire source control tree. Now, I'm in my dev site, so I'm going to go into here in development, and I'm going to select that solution right there. I'll select this guy, I'll go ahead and save my build dev. I'm going to right-click this one, say edit build definition. I'll probably have to push code again here in a second, but I'll do that while we're going on to the next topic. I'll select process here. And again, I'm going to go right here. This time I'm going to go into my production folder. There's my solution for my production build. I'm going to go ahead and save those guys. Everything should be all good. And now I'm just going to go ahead and fire these builds because I just committed code. I know that I've got separate code in both places. We actually did this the other day when we were practicing. And it was kind of interesting. We'll do queue build for dev. We had a question. The gentleman asked us. He said, well, it seemed like that build took... seemed like both of those builds took 6 minutes to run. He's like, the first one took 3 minutes to run, and the second one took 6 minutes to run. I said, actually, they both took 3 minutes to run. He's like, no, I said it took 6 minutes. I said, well, it's because it started at 4, because it queues the builds up. So it's going to run your dev build. Once your dev build's finished running, then it's going to run your production build. So that kind of made a little bit more sense. Tell your partner, I'm sorry for teasing. So I'll do queue build here. I'm going to queue up my production build. And if I were to open these guys up, see here, this build has already begun to run. I wonder if it's actually going to reflect it right in the portal already. It won't reflect it until the build is actually finished on the TFS side. But I can hear the deployments. Yeah, it's not finished. Because this build is actually running out of TFS right now. If I were to go out to my TFS window, show you right here, you'll see in my TFS online site, You'll see that the build is actually in the process of running right here. So these two are queued and ready to go.
I'm going to let those builds run, and then I'm actually going to flip back over to those slides so you can see that those builds have completed once we finish the next segment of the conversation. So I'm flipping back over to Luke real quick.
Thanks, Brendan. Okay, so step two of proving out Kenico and Windows Azure Web Tasks for us was looking at database deployment, just seeing how easy it was going to be for us to get this up to the cloud. So basically we want to develop on-premise for as long as possible. We've got a number of developer workstations that are connected to the on-premise database, and we've got an on-premise TFS account for source code control as well. So we need to be able to push this out into Azure. We want to be able to then back this up within Windows Azure. And then ideally as well, we want to be able to back that up into Azure Blob storage, because it's a lot cheaper than having another database up and running there. And then at the end of the conference, we want to be able to pull the database out of the cloud if necessary, once we're all done. So I'm just going to switch over and we'll have a little bit of a look at some of these things. I'm going to give you a little bit of a demo on how to accomplish this. So I've got my local on-premise database here that I've set up in advance, and basically I've got SQL Server 2012 installed here. Now you don't actually need to use the full-blown SQL Server 2012 installation. You can just use the SQL Server 2012 tools and connect an on-premise 2008 or 2008 R2 SQL Server database. So I'm just going to click Tasks, Deploy Database, and I've got a connection string I've already set up. I'll just copy this out of the portal. So it's going to go up to my UFV server. Okay. I'll click Finish and start that running. So I'm just going to move back to and look at the portal, which I'm currently logged into here. So this is a database I set up in advance, and so there's a couple of things. If you want to connect your Management Studio to your database up in Azure, that's relatively straightforward. There's a couple of things you need to make sure you do. One is just go and copy the database connection string from here within the portal, and you need to make sure you click the Setup Windows Azure Firewall Rules for this IP address. I've already done that in advance, so I should say, yep, your IP address is got a firewall rule, that's fine. So I should now be able to move back to this, and so I've already connected to this database, and you can see the backup here. So there we go. So the database I'm deploying has now just showed up here, and I can connect through to this. And we'll just, okay, so the operation is complete. So just to verify, this is actually there. Just going to fire a select command at that to make sure my data actually come up. Execute, and the data comes back out of the cloud. There we go. So that's been deployed, and I can actually back up this database right from within Management Studio here. I'll open another query window. If I've got master database selected, then I can say create database with copy as copy of and I can run that, and that actually just, it'll create a backup of the database and set that up in the cloud as well. So you can also do that through Management Studio here. So you can see that I've got two databases there, and a third one will pop up shortly because I've just started copying that one. There's a really good automated backup that's only recently been released in the last few months. I'm just going to show you this that I've already set up in advance. So my backup test database, I've set up automated exports. I've got a storage account here I've selected. I've got frequency every 2 days, and this kicks off about 3 a.m. New Zealand time. It's a retention period, always keep at least one. And so this is running every couple of days and it's backing up. So if I click new database here, I can just select one of these automated backups that's already been done. So I'll select one from yesterday, the 10th. Give it a new name. So restoring from an automated backup is as easy as that. And so when the time comes for us to want to pull this database out of the cloud and put it back on premise, and move over to the storage account here, go into the containers, and it sets up automated SQL export here, this folder. And these are all the backpack files that get automatically backed up. So I can just click on one of those, download it, and restore it into Management Studio on-premise. Okay. Brady, I'll talk back to you.
I think that's a little bit better than copying MDF files around. Anybody disagree with that? People do either, right? Big network paths and whatnot. All right. So if you've got your website running, you definitely want to load test. But before we get into load testing, I want to show you that indeed, these builds have indeed fired. So there's our dev build. That active deployment has actually gone out. If I click on the prod guide, that active deployment is also fired. If I go over here, there's our production site. You'll see that the URL is onstage demo prod. If I go right here, there's onstage demo dev, and there's our development environment. I didn't commit those two little code changes that I made. I just went ahead and pushed the code from what I already had in the repository. So you can see here that basically through branches, we've actually provided you the ability to manage multiple environments. And if you just want to do a simple DNS swap, whenever you push to your UAT or QA environment and get signed off on it, you can change your DNS pointer to the new one, A/B testing all day long. You can also do this through GitHub using branches. You can also do this with Bitbucket using branches. You can basically tell it, I want you to look at this branch in my GitHub repository or my local Git repository, and it'll go ahead and fire. We also give you Git directly up in Windows Azure website, so you can do it there as well. So it's not isolated just to TFS. All right, so load testing. I've been told many times that I can pretty much figure out a way to work SignalR into any demonstration there is. Okay, I love SignalR. I just go crazy with SignalR all the time. So what I'm gonna do here is I'm gonna fire up a new window, and you'll see here that I've got this simple little page that as I refresh in this browser, you'll see that I'm gonna have a hit count kind of escalating right here. If I were to actually click around and go into the About page, you're gonna see that as I move through the site, I go to Fibonacci to basically simulate heavy CPU load. There you go. So it's just, you see the little hit counter running. Okay, it's kind of silly. Why don't I show you that in conjunction with load testing? To show you how that code works, I've got a pretty simple action filter right here. Whenever the action runs, let me go ahead and zoom in on that for you guys. Sorry about that. 150. Whenever that action filter runs, I'm going to create a new site hit object. I'm just going to basically store up the action, the controller, the host server, which server the hit actually is going to land on. Why do I want to do that? Is with Azure OpenStack, I can scale it out. So I can have it on multiple servers. And I basically want to see which, you know, clients get which servers. I'm going to timestamp it, and I'm going to record the visitor IP so that I can, you know, find you later. And then I'm going to new open instance of my data context and just go ahead and save it in, publish that in there. And then what I do in my site is for every single action that I've got, actually decorate each action with that site hit attribute or that hit count attribute. So every time you hit any of the different action views in my site, I'm going to go ahead and log a hit to the database. Why would I want to show you that in conjunction with action filters and with SignalR? Because it's fun to watch it pick up. Okay. So what I'm going to do first is I've created a new testing project directly inside Visual Studio. If you want to add a project to it that looks like you're testing, you can actually go right here and do a web performance test. And after you get a web performance test set up, that basically you walk through the process of, you know, recording your hits in your site. Once you're done with that, you can actually go ahead and add a load test to it. I've already done this, but real quickly, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and do right here and say add new web performance test, and see what it's going to do. It's actually going to fire up my browser. It's going to fire up my browser, and as I go to sites out there. What do we call that one? Load testing demo on the site. I go to sites.net. It's actually going to record each thing. So it's going to record everything that I do. Now, what you'll see here is that I've got a couple of SignalR URLs. I would probably delete those because I don't want to stimulate the SignalR traffic. That gets kind of ugly. So I'm not going to do that. And I'm not even going to save this right now because I don't really want to go through the process of creating a brand new one. So I'm going to clear that one out.
I'm actually going to get rid of that web test too. It's going to go ahead and delete it. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to open up web test one. And what you'll see is that in web test one, I'm doing a few things. I'm hitting the home page, then I'm hitting the about page, then I'm hitting my Fibonacci sequence, just to kind of walk through the entire process. Now what I'll do now is I'm going to split my screen up a little bit here so we can see everything all at one time, maybe, if we're lucky. Shrink this window down. I'm going to go to my web test here. I'm just going to hit run. And just watch this number right here. Hit run, and you'll see that it's going to open up the browser directly inside Studio. That's going to show you what each hit is going to look like. So you can actually see how long it takes each individual hit to happen. So that's just one web test. I just ran through those three hits that I've recorded right there in my Visual Studio IDE. If you wanted to do a coded UI test, where you click a button, you make sure that it says hello world, you know, blah, blah, blah. You can do all that stuff as well if you wanted to. You can get really nasty with your tests. But what we're going to do is do the dirtiest thing ever. We're going to launch basically a DOS. Okay. So I'm going to open up this load test right here, and I've got it set up so that it will run basically up to 250 users. And just to show you that test will indeed run, I'll select my load test right here, hit run load test, and you're going to see that it's going to start to hit, and it should tick up pretty quick. There we go. So that's actually me running a load test. It's going to just basically give me the ability, do you want to do 250 users? Do you want to ramp for 10 minutes? What do you want to do? How hard do you want to hit it? I just hit it 700 times. Plus, one of you's out there doing this too. In which case, thanks. Makes my case even stronger. All right. So what I'll do is I'll show you all the stuff that you're going to get back. It's going to show you your paid response time. You're going to see that as you add traffic, you know, you might have a little bit of slow throughput. It's going to show you all the different controllers and agents. Those are the different metrics that you want to get back. If you were running this on your network, you could actually attach this to your IIS box, and you can see all the basically the memory and performance coming directly from that guy. Can't do that on Windows other websites yet, but I have been asking for it, so maybe one day. All right, I'm going to stop this because, you know, I think I've made the point pretty clear that we can beat our website to death using that load testing tool. Anybody ever have to do load testing in your own world?
You ever have to use WCAP?
Fun, huh? Okay, this makes it really easy. You do all this visually. And I want to point out that in addition to this, inside of Visual Studio 2013, there's an additional little checkbox. It says run this load test in TFS. Then you can scale that load test out. You can run it for multiple boxes. You can actually use the cloud to do your load test. Pretty valuable when you want to simulate crazy load, like, I don't know. Okay, maybe, yeah. So that being discussed, I'm going to go ahead and flip it back over to Luke. We're going to talk about the next good stuff.
Okay, thanks, Brady. So the next step on our proving out process is looking at scaling. And so this is something that we've done for a number of clients in the past. We've set up a Kentico web in the traditional web farm model, and it's actually quite an involved process. There's a number of steps you've got to get through. So the thing is, you've got to configure each server, you've got to copy the source code up to each server, you've got to configure IIS, you've got to store certificates. You need to handle session state, so when a user comes to your website and does something like login, if the next request that they get bounced to a different web server, you've got to remember the fact that they've been logged in. So typically the way you do that is you set up a database to handle session state. You need to edit the hosts file to synchronize content in Kentico between all of the web farms and the web server. And there's additional things you need to add into your webconf file and additional Kentico configuration tasks you need to do to get this working and then to test it all as well. So the promise of Kentico under Windows Azure Websites was that we could accomplish all of that with this slider here. So obviously, for that to work, all of these things on the left-hand side of the screen have to be taken care of in some way. So configuration of each server. Well, when we drag the slider up, we save that. Windows Azure Websites will spin up another copy of the site. Session state, how do we handle that? Well, the thing is, we can set up a SQL Server database to handle that as well. But I asked Brady this one, actually. I said, well, what happens if I just drag up the slider? In an ideal world, Windows Azure Websites would implement something like sticky sessions, where each user would be affinitized to a particular server, and when they came back, they would stay on that same server. And he said, yeah, that's what it does. So while I could set up a SQL Server database to handle session state, you don't actually have to. So looking at why content synchronization is important, it's important to have a look at the difference in architecture between these two models. So Kentico, with the WebFarm environment, you have a number of physically separate web servers. And Kentico has a scheduled task that runs in the background, so when a user uploads a file to one of those web servers, that has to be shuttled across to the other servers in the farm. But with Windows Azure websites, when you spin up an instance of your site, it's pointing to your source code, which is actually stored in Azure Blob Storage. And when you spin up additional instances of your site, it's still pointing to those same source code files. It doesn't replicate those. So there's no content synchronization that needs to be done. And the additional web config and setup tasks, obviously they're not really required either. So scaling was very, very easy for us with Windows Azure websites. So having a bit of a look at how scaling works, under the free and shared modes, you're actually limited to daily quotas for things like memory usage and data throughput. And when you scale out, your website will be copied across to another VM. So the thing is, it's also important to note that this is a multi-tenancy environment, so your website is shared along with other websites on the same virtual machine. And when you scale up to standard mode, your website gets copied across to its own virtual machine. And when you scale out in that virtual environment, you get a number of your own virtual machines. And you can actually take advantage of the fact that all of your websites in that same geographic region will also be scaled. So all your websites can benefit on increased availability and performance as well. So I'll hand back to Brady now. We're going to have a look at
integration. All right, I'm going to pull the slide up. And what's interesting is, since we actually talked about the scaling stuff, it's actually works out pretty well. The site that I just load tested, anybody want to take a guess what tier I had it set up in? Ryan? Yeah, free. Now there are a bunch of red exclamation marks in my portal because I actually overloaded the free stuff. Okay, free is really used for like dev and test. You wouldn't want to like put a production site in, and you definitely wouldn't want to hit it 3,000 times. And one of the reasons I did it on purpose was I've got that Fibonacci guy running. And the Fibonacci algorithm that I'm running actually kind of simulates the CPU spike. Well, I just hit it 3,000 times. What do you think that means? My site's got to be upgraded at this point. So it kind of pairs well with what Luke was talking about. Once you know you're going to have that load, you need to be prepared for that. If you're working in the old world where you got to go order a new server, pay somebody to install IIS on it, then pay somebody to set up ARR, et cetera, it's going to take you a little while. In the Windows Azure websites world, you just slide the slider and you're off and running. Now, what I want to share real quick is on-premise integration. This is one of my favorite features of websites, and hopefully I'll be able to show you this off the mic. I'll publish to a different account real quick. But anybody ever want to put your internet, your website, out on the web and have web scale so you can be able to take millions and millions of hits? You might have some sort of issue where you can't put your data out, or you can't put some middle tier stuff out, and you have like an on-premise app that you need to integrate with. Or worse, you have a legacy application with a different language, like, I don't know, Java, that you want to be able to talk to. It's from your application. Nothing against Java, but I'm just saying, sometimes it's hard to integrate .NET to Java, right? You got to figure out a way to do that. Well, what I'm going to show you how to do is to use a storage queue. You can do this using Service Bus as well. So your website will basically throw a message either into a storage queue that a Java application is watching, or into a Service Bus that your Java application is watching. And we basically have an SDK for all the languages that we support from Windows Azure. Node, Java, Python, .NET, et cetera, et cetera. We have support for all those things in our SDKs. I want to show you a quick little demo real quick. Options for integration with on-premise environments, even when they're not .NET. Probably the longest demo title you've ever seen. Saying the title will probably take longer than showing a demo. And I do want to caveat this by saying that I am absolutely, see there, all these sites are actually still suspended. So what I'm going to have to do is I'm going to drop into a different account. I'm going to turn this account off. This is actually my production account. And while that's reloading, what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you this GitHub repository real quick. If you do any Java code, or you have anybody in your office that's saying, well, we can't move to Azure because Azure doesn't support Java. I'll prove you different now.
Prove you wrong. So this is our GitHub repository where we actually have our Java SDK. And this SDK gives you support for things like, storage queues, blobs, service bus, the whole nine. Everything that you can do inside of .NET with our APIs, you can do directly with Java using the APIs too. Again, I'm not a Java guy, but I have Eclipse running right over here. Can't really zoom in too well on this. What I'm going to do is I'm going to scroll this guy down real quick, and you're going to see right here that I have set up a storage account. I'm creating a Cloud Queue client, basically telling you I want you to go out and look at that queue. We're going to party on that in just a second. I want you to start receiving a message. If that, as long as that message is acknowledged, I want you to write that out to the screen. I want you to show me what that looks like. Now, I've also got .NET code over here. Let's find this guy. Open this solution up real quick. It's out of Visual Studio 2012. And I'm going to put these side by side. I'm going to get rid of my test window right here. I'm going to put these side by side so you can see the Java code, you can see the .NET code. I'm going to open up my default ASPX file. And what you'll see is that in this guy, I kind of did it like in Fluent style. I just did it all in one continuous line code. But what you'll see is I've got Cloud Storage Account. I parse the connection string. Look at there. In Java, it's parse. Cloud Storage Account.parse. Create Cloud Queue Client. Create Cloud Queue Client. But you'll see what we're doing is we're actually being a good Java citizen and we're keeping their capitalization syntax and we're keeping the .NET capitalization syntax. But the point is, once you learn our SDK, you can work with your Java patriots or your Ruby guys or anybody else on your team that doesn't use .NET, or if you have another team in your environment that you need to talk to at your Azure, you can work with those teams and you can actually get that stuff done. All right, so what I'm going to do real quickly, since I've blown up my account, let's see, that demo worked better than I expected it to. I'm going to make sure that I've got my connection string right in here. I do. I'm going to publish this guy out. I'm going to go ahead and create a site right out here. Oh, never mind. I'm going to do this guy. I'm going to say new, compute, website, quick create, Java integration demo. I'll put that in West US. That is on a standard box, which is good. Once that's finished creating, I'm actually going to go back into studio and I'm going to publish this guy out there. Then I'm going to run Eclipse and I'm going to show you how these two talk to each other. Now that that's probably done, I'm going to right click this, select publish. I'm just going to publish this guy out. I've got an old publish profile I need to remove right here. Get rid of that guy, close this out, do an import. Again, import from a site that I just created. Java integration demo, click OK here. I'm going to publish this. Now I've already got my Windows Azure Storage Queue created out there. I actually let the Java code create that for me when I ran the Java code earlier. This is actually just going to go out and it's going to give me the ability to just push messages into that queue. And I'm going to light up Eclipse here and let Eclipse run so that I can show you those messages coming in directly through Eclipse. It's kind of a silly demo, but if you can imagine you're really experienced Java programmers, of which I am not one, if those guys want to basically use JDBC to save all the data to your on-premises database or your mainframe or whatever other legacy backend that you might have and they're using Java to do that, and you want to have web scale in the cloud, but you don't want to move everything out, you will be able to do that. Alright. Guys like that? That's pretty cool. And now that's how you can basically use storage queues to integrate with your on-prem environment. You can do the same thing with service bus queues or service bus topics. We're not going to go too deep into that right now. You can also do that with what's called service bus relays. You can actually have a WCF service living inside, the endpoint of which is actually running up in service bus, and as long as you can hit the service bus endpoint, it'll relay that message back internally and you can go crazy on it. And that's the end of that demo. The next one, last thing we're going to talk about here is going to be the big stuff, the big data stuff.
Not big data, but cloud storage.
Yeah.
Okay, so the final step for us in proving this out is file storage. And so the major component of that in the TechEd website is obviously the slide decks. These are fairly large, and it's quite a lot of them. So I had a chance encounter with a colleague of mine, Keith, at the Waterfall some time back, and he said, I hope you guys are doing the TechEd website this year. That's pretty cool. I hope you fix the slide upload problem this year. I said, what problem? He said, well, it was a nightmare last year. I kept trying to upload my slide, kept timing out. I had to contact the track owner and ask how I could get, do I put in Dropbox and share it with him? And then I remembered, I thought back to the session of his that I went to last year, and he managed to work an entire high-definition version of the Hobbit trailer into his slide deck. and he's trying to upload that. So at close to 400 megabytes, it's not too surprising he had a problem. And at a stroke there, I realized he'd created a couple of problems for me that I thought we needed to resolve. One of them was storage space. I need to make sure, I don't know how many keys we were going to have out there that we're going to be uploading high definition video. So I figured I need to make sure that we're not going to run out of storage space. And number two, we need to fix the upload timeout issue. So we need some visual feedback for the user that tries to upload a 100 megabyte plus file that actually something's happening there. So for storage space, we had three options that I looked at. So Windows Azure websites actually comes with 10 gigabytes of storage. So I could have used that, but it's important to note that your source code lives there, as well as other files, and also your if you have additional websites, they also use up that space in that same data center. So at 10 gigabyte, I wasn't really confident that was going to be enough space. SQL Azure, we could store in the SQL Azure, but this is a lot more expensive. And Azure Blob Storage really is what was designed to handle this problem, storing lots of files or large files. So that was what we went with. And so just having a look at the Windows Azure Storage in New Zealand dollars, the smallest unit that you can increment, that you can buy is 100 gigabytes. That's less than $9 a month. So, and that goes all the way up to 100 terabytes if you really need it. So that was going to be all the space we'd ever need. And the upload timeout issue. We looked at HTML5, the file APIs. So this is supported in IE10 and up. And what this allows us to do, it allows us to break down the file the person's uploaded into chunks and send up a little bit at a time. And there's a really great blog post called Uploading Good Files to Azure Storage. I've got the URL here. And that's a series of three posts on how to upload large files to Azure Storage and how to upload multiple files to Azure Storage. So I'd recommend you go and check this out if this is a problem you need to solve. And what this blog post walks through is the JavaScript code that you need to break the file down into chunks, and then the server-side code as well to receive those chunks and save that straight into Azure Storage. So that being done, Pete's happy and he can upload his Demolition of Skull trailer this year. And I'm just going to pop out to a quick demo of how that works. Okay, so I'm just going to grab a file here that's not too large. Upload that.
That's all using HTML5 APIs, right?
It is, yes.
Yeah.
I don't know. I forgot to click the button. Well, I'll move back to Azure Storage. We'll look at where this actually gets saved is in under one of the storage accounts here. I'll look at the container. And so basically we've got slides. Oh. Just ask me to click the wrong button. Let's try that again. Okay. And so there's a slides container set up here. So this is where the files get saved. So with Azure Blob Storage, yeah, you can create folders here, and you can store all your files in folders as well. You can see I've got a GUID sort of set up here, and we've got a little slash that designates this as a folder I'm storing this into. Oh, there we go. Okay, sorry, you missed the little progress bar that was taken away in the background there. So, but we get a little readout there that says how long that took to upload.
Okay.
Oh, awesome. All right, thank you, Brady.
Awesome. Let's end our demos.